Welcome, everyone, to the Bullpen Report. We're part of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. As always, I'm your host. It's the Red Fox Roto, Dan Thompson. I'm back for anyone who looked for the episode on Saturday. I do apologize. I was sick. I had no voice. Couldn't do the pod. I did leave a post on X, on Twitter, just with some of my fab recommended targets for the weekend. I also posted about it in the FTN Fantasy Baseball Discord for those subscribers. And if you're not a subscriber, it's a good idea. But I'm back today. We're going to wrap up kind of what has happened over the weekend and this first, well, we haven't even played a full week of the MLB season yet. I think that's something that's very important to take note of. We've all overreacted, I'm sure, to a lot of bad pitcher performances, big pitcher performances, and certainly can feel a little disappointing if your early round closer has already blown a save or two, has a 15 ERA. But this early, most issues aren't something we really need to think too much about, to worry too much about. Anything that I believe so far that has been relevant, we're going to go ahead and cover today. And it is Tuesday, March 31st, as we're going to start going through some of these bullpens that had some doubts over the offseason, that maybe had some competitions that were involved. We'll take a look at some of the early save chances that have occurred and maybe what information we can glean from that. But first, let's do a little review of what happened over the weekend in free agency. We saw on the NFBC some robust spending on saves. Three of the top four most added players in the 12-team online championship leagues were relievers. That was Cole Sands, Jordan Romano, Ryan Stanek in St. Louis. The highest single free agency bid in any OC league was a $555 spend on Jordan Romano. I mean, that's more than half the $1,000 budget for the entire season. So you really hope Jordan Romano lasts all season long as the closer in LA if you're spending that much on him. Now, some lucky idiot managed to get a Jordan Romano for $23, the lowest of all 191 winning bids. That was me. But really all that shows is it's not that I'm smarter or I knew what I was doing. It just shows you should make the bid. Even if you don't think it's enough, even if you think you're just throwing out a low ball bid, go ahead and put it out there. You might not think it's enough, but sometimes it is. Now, today, we are just going to start going through some of those bullpens, like I said, that had some question marks early in the season or where maybe the context has changed even this quickly and where I think it's relevant enough that we need to start looking at some jobs differently. I'm just going to start going through alphabetically, so let's begin in Arizona. Now, my spring training read on the Diamondback bullpen looks like it worked out so far. Paul Sewald recorded the club's first save on Monday. He had a clean inning, one strikeout. I don't think Sewald is a great bet for season-long success. AJ Puck is expected back as early as June. I mean, his arrival alone could push Sewald, but Sewald himself, you know, really hasn't been a dominant force as a closer in quite a few years. So we'll see. But it was Kevin Ginkle who was considered Sewald's closest competition. And Ginkle was, he was bad last year. He was bad in the spring. His first appearance of 2026, he took a loss in the eighth inning. He pitched last night in the sixth inning with an eight-run lead. So I don't think Ginkle is currently a threat, and I really don't think he ever should have been considered as one. Sewald seems secure right now, but of course, like most closers, he needs to pitch well enough to keep that job. All right, our next visit will be the south side of Chicago. Sir Anthony Dominguez began his 2026 innocently enough, tossed a scoreless inning in the often dreaded non-save situation. But his actual first save situation on Sunday was a disaster. After they started the eighth inning with a four-run lead, the White Sox had to turn to their closer with one out, bases loaded. I'm assuming it was for a five-out save and not just to finish that inning off. But Dominguez popped out the first batter, had two outs, was almost out of the jam, but then he allowed a three-run homer to Christian Yelich and blew that lead. He was even pulled after walking the following hitter. Now, the White Sox have paid Dominguez to be their closer. So one bad outing, it shouldn't spell his doom. But if any more do follow this one quickly, you know, maybe he gets an early break from high leverage. I do think it would take some truly awful performances for Dominguez to lose the closer job completely after getting 2 years and $20 million from a team that really doesn't spend a whole lot. I suppose I'll talk about Colorado next because they exist and I do have the usual, you know, 10 to 15 minutes to fill up here. Victor Vodnik blew the first save chance of Colorado's season on Sunday. That's something we should get used to, even if Victor Vodnik isn't ultimately the name that ends up doing it most often. But right now, you know, he is the closer. No one should be desperate for saves this early, but there's definitely leagues and formats where Vodnik could be rosterable since he does have that job. But as I typically say, don't roster Rockies relievers. Now over in Detroit, nothing has been a surprise there. Kenley Jansen was considered to be the favorite to close most of the offseason. That was not explicitly, but pretty much verified by AJ Hinch, you know, in comments through spring training. And it was Jansen, of course, that was out there to save the first Tigers win on Friday. Three batters up, three batters down, three strikeouts, which was big for Jansen. Now, he might not pitch on many consecutive days anymore. We shouldn't really see any, you know, three of four, four of five from Jansen. But he does look like he'll get the majority of the saves in Detroit. And I still like Kyle Finnegan as the primary backup option there. Now, one place where we do have not controversy, but a situation to monitor closely, that's in Houston. There was some legitimate excitement for Brian Abreu to begin the season as the Astros closer. With Josh Hader on the IL, he's got his biceps inflammation. Well, that excitement has turned south pretty quickly. Abreu allowed three runs in a non-save situation on Saturday, and then he followed that up by getting pulled from a save chance on Sunday. Between those two outings, Brian Abreu has as many walks as outs. That's four of each. He's shown some diminished velocity, the fastball down maybe 3-4 miles per hour. It was lefty Brian King that bailed out Abreu for the save on Sunday. We might see that happen a little more frequently if for some reason Abreu is pitching compromised. If he's got, you know, maybe it's the kind of the dead arm phase that a lot of pitchers experience in spring. It could affect some pitchers early on in the season. Maybe that's all it is. But we do need to watch this situation closely because Abreu was drafted as a top 200 pick, sometimes as high as, you know, top 150. So nobody wants to see a pick they spent that much draft capital on struggle this much early. But speaking of struggling early, our next team is the Kansas City Royals. Carlos Estevez struggled with lower velocity all spring, and that has continued into the regular season and is his first save chance on Saturday. So he entered the game to try to preserve a two-run lead, but it all just fell apart from there. The sequence went walk, single, pop out, single, walk, single, grand slam, six runs, and a loss. His fastest pitch of the night, 92.3, which doesn't sound that bad, except that was the grand slam. Now, the following day, Estevez was in a walking boot. He had been hit in the ankle by a comebacker. And Lucas Erceg was able to get the save chance. He converted it. And I'm sure that's why his fab price went up significantly that night. Now, could we see this as an excuse for Carlos Estevez to maybe get an IL stint, you know, keep working in the bullpen, trying to get that velocity all the way up, or at least closer to, you know, that 95, 96 range where he was at last year? I don't know, but Carlos Estevez is not going to be successful working in the low 90s. So either way, it may be Lucas Erceg closing games for the near future. Now, if anyone saw last night where John Schreiber got that save for the Royals, not too much to be concerned about if you had just spent a lot of money to get Lucas Erceg. He had just thrown the previous 2 days, so Erceg was just getting some rest. All right, let's visit Los Angeles next. The Angels. There's no surprise on the Dodgers. It's Edwin Diaz. He's looked great so far in his first two save chances. But for the Angels, it was Jordan Romano, it turns out, that struck first, getting the save in the Angels opener on Thursday. And then the next night, he was used to finish off a four-run game. Now, if Jordan Romano had beaten out a healthy Kirby Yates for the closer job, I would say, yeah, let's pile in, you know, all in, put up a big fab bid. He's really got a chance to stick all year as the closer. He has the experience, hopefully, you know, further removed from any injury issues he's had in the last several years. He's looked good so far. But it's impossible to know what Kurt Suzuki will do once Kirby Yates returns. So should Jordan Romano have had average winning bids in the mid-hundreds? Maybe not. He was absolutely worth adding. But we just don't know what's going to happen when Kirby Yates is back. Certainly, Romano has made his case to stick as the club's closer for the early going, but right now that's more hope than certainty. Anyone that paid up for him on Sunday night, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be started probably on your rosters until something happens, but he will have to hold off Kirby Yates when Yates is back. All right, let's make a stop now in Milwaukee, where Trevor Megill or Abner Uribe that was a legitimate question for most of the offseason. Each guy had their ardent supporters and their detractors. And while I was, I favored Megill's return, you know, to the role he really thrived in for most of 2025. But I didn't do so with high confidence until Megill turned in one of the better spring training performances you'll see from a relief pitcher. And, you know, sure enough, it was Trevor Megill that received and converted the Brewers' first save opportunity on Sunday. He did take a loss in a tie game last night, allowing a hit and a walk with just the one run. So that could open the door for Uribe to step up tonight, Tuesday, with Megill likely to be rested, having pitched 2 days in a row. So maybe this is still a competition of sorts, but I think it is telling that it was Trevor Megill who got the first save chance, and he is the one I would expect to emerge as the primary closer early on. All right, let's go to Minnesota now. It was Cole Sands who struck first for the Twins. He nailed down a save Saturday with a couple strikeouts and just one walk allowed. Now, it does remain to be seen if the former Twins closer, Taylor Rogers, if he'll factor into the ninth inning from the left side. But Cole Sands definitely does appear to be the clear favorite of the right-handed options, which probably makes him the majority save earner in that bullpen for the foreseeable future. So Sands was bid on rather aggressively in the online championship leagues of the NFBC. His average winning bid was, I believe, in the 60s, I recall seeing. So he's now owned in a majority of leagues. Maybe not a great long-term solution, but early on in the season like this, you're just banking as many saves as you can get, and Sands is a viable play for that. All right, we will visit now Pittsburgh. The Pirates created a couple save chances over the weekend, so it was an opportunity to see if Don Kelly's talk about Dennis Santana not getting all the save chances, if that would come true. But each save chance came in extra innings, and it was after all the high leverage relievers had already thrown in the game. So we really didn't get to see much that was interesting to us as fantasy players. Hunter Barco blew the first save chance, and then Jose Urquidy converted on the second. But those aren't names we should expect to see frequently, and certainly nobody we need to be concerned with, you know, like for free agency. Now, so far, the way the Pirate relievers have been used, Dennis Santana is being used like he's the closer. He's typically been the last of the high leverage relievers to enter the game. We don't know what to expect moving forward as far as saves, but it doesn't really look like Dennis Santana is a bad bet for saves. He might not get all of the opportunities. Very few relievers even do, but we should still expect him to get the most. Now, it's okay, Sacramento. This is definitely shaping up to be one of baseball's most frustrating bullpens for fantasy purposes. A lot of people thought Justin Sterner, he's the best reliever. He should be the closer. He will be the closer. He took the loss in the A's first game on Friday, allowing a walk-off run in the ninth inning. On Saturday, we saw Michael Kelly and Scott Barlow both blow saves in consecutive innings. Last night, Sterner pitched the fifth inning, down by three runs. We've seen Elvis Alvarado, Mark Leiter Jr., and a bunch of different pitchers all just kind of interchangeably being used. I don't think anybody emerges as the lion's share of saves in Sacramento. So for now, my recommendation is really just stay away from the bullpen altogether. All right, in San Francisco, I had some confidence in Ryan Walker as a fantasy closer there, in part because I thought Walker was due for a bounce back season, but also because there just really wasn't a threat for saves behind him. Well, we haven't even played a full week, and that's no longer true. Keaton Wynn has really looked electric as a reliever. He struck out the side in a perfect inning just last night, and it should be important to note that this was the eighth inning. It was his first hold of the season. Ryan Walker did convert the save in the ninth, but he allowed a two-run home run to Jackson Merrill and really just escaped with the save. With a now potentially legitimate weapon to push him, Ryan Walker has to avoid early trouble to keep that job. You know, Tony Vitello has no particular loyalties to Ryan Walker. It's Vitello's first year as a manager. He's a bit of a wild card, how he'll handle things if there's any trouble. So the context in San Francisco has shifted pretty quickly. Keaton Wynn might be a solid speculative ad this coming weekend in free agency, especially if Walker has struggle through another save chance or blows a save. This is a situation where Tony Vitello could pretty quickly turn from Walker now that there is a good option to use instead. All right, our next bullpen will be in St. Louis, where it was widely assumed, and reasonably so, that Riley O'Brien would resume his closer role for the Cardinals this year, the way he finished as their closer last year. But that has not been the case at all. In the Cardinals' first game, O'Brien entered to get the final out of the seventh inning. That was against Junior Caminero. You could have said, oh, it was high leverage. They were just getting him in there. He pitched a scoreless eighth inning after. It was Ryan Stanek that was awarded the first save chance. And Stanek has a long history of control issues, we'll put it lightly. He walked three batters, but was still able to convert that first save with a scoreless inning. Now on Saturday, Riley O'Brien again pitched the seventh inning, this time the whole inning, for a hold. It was no longer a save situation by the ninth, so Matt Svanson got into the game, got himself in trouble. So there was Ryan Stanek again, going for his second save chance. Well, this time, instead of three walks, Stanek allowed three hits, and he blew that lead. Now, there's a few things we know for sure so far. Preseason hopeful Matt Svanson, not in the saves picture at all. Anyone still holding a share of Svanson, you can drop him. You know, unfortunately, it just didn't work out. But whether the next save chance goes to Ryan Stanek, who has not looked good so far, or Riley O'Brien, who has and was considered by many to be the favorite to close, that's going to be interesting. Stanek was appropriately widely added in most leagues over the weekend, and intelligently, the average winning bids were much lower compared to Jordan Romano, Lucas Erceg. But I like the idea of holding Riley O'Brien if you have him, or trying to add him cheaply in any leagues where he may have already been dropped. I just don't see Ryan Stanek as a long-term answer at closer there. All right, we've got a couple more bullpens. This looks like it will be a longer episode than usual, but there's been a lot of activity early on, so do want to make sure to cover everything. So in Tampa, the presumed leader of the bullpen committee was, of course, Griffin Jacks. First game, there he is in the sixth inning, attempting to douse some flames that were ignited by Ian Seymour, Garrett Clevenger. Jacks did not succeed. He allowed a tying sacrifice fly to the first hitter he faced, then a two-run homer to Alec Burleson immediately after. And the next night was not any better for Griffin Jacks. This time he came on in the 10th inning for a save chance, but with the runner already on at second base, Jacks gave up a walk, a sacrifice bunt, and a two-run walk-off single to J.J. Weatherholt. Now last night, Jacks threw a scoreless inning in a tie game, but it was the 7th inning. So this is not at all what those who chased Jacks up the draft board as a high upside closer in March. This is not at all what they wanted to see, but it's not entirely surprising considering that Kevin Cash told us all offseason he was going to use a committee. Guys were going to mix and match and move around. At this point, with Edwin Uceta still working back from his shoulder injury, due back possibly early in April in the next week or two, we could see Brian Baker now figure into the save mix, as well as still Garrett Clevenger from that left side. I just don't know that we have a 20-25 save pitcher in this bullpen. I still really like Griffin Jacks. It's been a couple bad outings to start his season. I do think eventually he still should be the leader in saves on this team. But right now, things don't look great for the long term. All right, our last stop is going to be in Texas, where the only two names that were mentioned all offseason as closer options were Robert Garcia and Chris Martin. So who has the first two saves of the Rangers season? Tyler Alexander. Yes, Tyler Alexander. Okay. The first came Saturday. This was after Garcia and Martin combined to blow a three-run lead in the ninth inning. And Alexander's next save happened just last night. Now, that one's a little more explainable. Garcia and Martin had pitched both of them the previous 2 days, so most likely just getting some rest, so Alexander got another chance. I don't think he's going to just up and take the closer job. You know, we should still see Robert Garcia and or Chris Martin getting most of those opportunities. But we have to wait longer to figure out which of the two might have the advantage and will get the greater share of those chances. So Robert Garcia, Chris Martin, still kind of in a holding pattern, waiting to see what happens there. Well, that will do it for today. Certainly did go a little bit longer than the usual episode. But again, just want to cover everything that seems to be relevant in bullpens at the moment. I will be back on Saturday for the normal free agency preview. So I hope to not see everybody. This is a podcast after all. But hope for everyone to, you know, be able to get a normal episode on the normal schedule again. Until then, this is Dan Thompson, Red Fox Roto, bringing you the Bullpen Report and the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Let's close it out.